If this is true, it means your cell phone is just as bad as asbestos and smoking. So that's the first line of research that makes people realize, well, if that's true, of course, it means that using a cell phone for your entire life could lead to an increase in brain tumors.
Welcome everyone to the show, and I have a very special guest with me today. He is known as the EMF guy. We're going to be talking about EMFs today, as you can guess. It is Nick Pinot, and I'm so happy and glad that he was able to join us for today's podcast. He is a number one best-selling author of The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs, and he is a leading voice on the topic of electromagnetic pollution and how it affects our health. Now, Nick has interviewed some really high-profile people and some of the best minds on health and technology, and offers even courses and educational materials to raise awareness all about this topic of EMF. So, Nick, welcome on into the show. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's so great to have you, and I'm so looking forward to this conversation today. Of course, you know that I talk about EMFs, so you actually found me, and I've been following you for a number of years now. Tell us, what exactly are EMFs?
Sure. EMF stands for electromagnetic fields or electromagnetic frequencies, and in nature, we are always exposed to EMFs, and that's one of the points that many people make. Well, aren't we always exposed? Yes, for sure. There's visible light, there's invisible frequencies as well in the UV and infrared spectrum. And we need these natural frequencies to thrive. There's even, you know, the Schumann resonance, that is the natural earth magnetism that we are exposed to. And we know that we also need this resonance to thrive. However, in the last several decades, we've introduced new EMFs. We can call them human-made EMFs. And this is really the type of EMFs that can be considered a new type of electropollution. And that's really how I prefer to call it these days.
Yes. So some examples of that, just so that people know that we're all on the same page. So
like cell phones,
cell phone towers,
Bluetooth,
right?
A lot of technology that people are in love with these days, including, you know, the cell phone towers that need to communicate with one another. Now there's also thousands, if not now going to hundreds of thousands of satellites that are going to be launched as well. So this entire infrastructure emits EMFs. And there's an increasing amount of scientific concern over what is the potential effect that these EMFs have on humans, but also on anything biological that lives on the planet.
I see. And let's talk about some of those major negative effects when we talk about our health. We could talk maybe some of the symptoms as well, but when we talk about organ systems, can you sort of enlighten us a little bit as to what are some of the major concerns that you're seeing and what research is coming out now in terms of the negative effects of these EMFs on our health?
Sure. The most popular line of the research, and where there's been the most research, is with cancer and cell phones. That's something that's been, you know, in I think, a controversy since the 1980s, since the advent of the first Nokia phones. So literally, we have 40 years of debate on this. But if you believe the IARC, which is a branch of the WHO, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, in 2011, they classified radio frequency radiation. That's exactly the type of EMFs emitted by your phone. They classified this agent, considered, you know, an environmental pollutant, if you will, as a class 2B carcinogen. That's the lowest classification. And they were missing the animal data. Not enough studies were conclusive in mice and, for example, in rats. But we have now these studies. So scientists have reviewed the data in 2018, and top epidemiologists said, you know, looking at the data now with these additional studies, including the National Toxicology Program study, it should be reclassified as a class 1 carcinogen. If this is true, it means your cell phone is just as bad as asbestos and smoking. So that's the first line of research that makes people realize, well, if that's true, of course, it means that using a cell phone for your entire life could lead to an increase in brain tumors. And something, a point that was made this afternoon on a separate interview is important. It's not like we're seeing millions of people die tomorrow morning from their phone. That's not the point. Right. But the problem is that we have billions of cell phone users. Almost every single human being is using a phone nowadays. And in 10 and 20 years, it will be essentially every human being. And if we increase brain tumor risks by a mere percent or even, you know, a fraction of 1%, then there's a lot of people that could be harmed. So the more technology is used in the entire population, the entire world, the more we need the research to be of extreme quality. But this is not what's happening. What is seen in the data and in this scientific world of EMFs is that the more findings that are found that there are health effects from these EMFs, and the less funding they get, because of course it goes against immense corporate interest and also I think a human interest, where we love technology but at the same time, we don't want to hear too much about the potential risks. And that's just a human thing. And yeah. I understand that. But at the same time, we have no choice but to actually face these dangers and recognize that there are downsides to this technology.
Right. So an analogy would be, you know, the teenager who doesn't want to hear mom and dad saying that, oh, smoking or drinking or vaping is bad for your health. You just kind of go, la, 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 I don't want to hear, right, as a young person.
For sure.
But we're not invincible as humans. And our physiology, as we know, is often going to give us signs and symptoms that maybe, you know, too much of that cell phone. And it's all about proximity. From what I've seen in the data, it's about proximity, right? How close
For sure.
you're holding technology to your body, you know, the earbuds in the ears, those air things and Bluetooth, and it has a lot to do with proximity. So maybe you can give us a few little hacks. I know that I'm sure in your home, you've got some hacks in terms of protecting yourself from these EMFs, but what can we do with our tech and, you know, our cell phones and things? Just give us some practical little tips that, you know, our users and our followers and our viewers can really, some takeaway points that can really help them in their day-to-day lives.
For sure. You know, and some of these are extremely easy to apply to your life. They just take a little bit more effort, or, you know, at first you have to remember to do them. One example is when you talk on the phone, you can use speakerphone. And if you don't want to annoy the entire, you know, subway train on your commute to work, you can always use wired headphones. And something that most people don't like hearing is that if you replace a phone that emits radio frequency radiation with a Bluetooth earbud that is inside your ear that emits the same type of radiation, you're probably just replacing one bad thing with another. So it's not a good alternative. And I'm not against using Bluetooth from time to time, but what I see in people who purchase these AirPods or equivalent from any other brand is that they wear them, you know, as a fashion accessory almost, you know, 12 to 20 hours per day, even, you know, falling asleep with them, or even falling asleep with the phone under the pillow. So what you want to do is just create distance between your body and the phone as much as you can. And we're not talking about going to extremes where if you have one phone call, you're in danger. And it's not like that, because all these exposures are cumulative over a lifetime. So we're really talking about habits here. It's like saying, are you in danger if you eat junk food once? No, we know it's not good for you, but maybe you can enjoy it from time to time. But we know that chronic exposure to junk food is a real problem for your metabolic health. And I would be hard pressed to find someone who can eat junk food every day and feel good on a constant basis, you know?
Right. Yeah, maybe, you know, with food and junk food, you can sort of get away with it when you're younger. But then as we age, we become much more sensitive. And this comes back to, from a health perspective, from our mitochondrial health, right? We know that our mitochondria change. We lose our mitochondria as we're aging. That's why we can get a lot in our CoQ10 levels when we're younger. We can get away with a lot of stuff. But as our energy depletes over time, as we age, then I would imagine that EMF exposure would be compounded in a way that, you know, maybe you can get away with it. And that's why I think our messaging to teenagers and youngsters, like, it drives me nuts. I don't know if you've seen it yourself. I believe you have a child, right? And yes. Yeah, I have lots of children as well. I have five. It drives me nuts when I go to a restaurant, or recently my husband and I were away on vacation, and in the restaurant, the parents are enjoying their meal. The kids are nice and calm and sedated because they're watching their tech as, you know, the evening goes on, and they've got their, and at the airport as well, like, these kids are sedated, let's say. It's not the right term maybe, but their time is filled, they're quiet, they're, you know, complacent, everything's great in their world, and they've got, you know, Bluetooth headphones on, and these kids were like 2 and 3 years old. It was heartbreaking for me. It took everything for me not to just, like, take those things off those kids' heads. Like, this is, you know, it's not healthy, and that's why I think the awareness piece for parents and for teenagers, somehow we have to make it cooler for, you know, you not to be wearing the AirPods. And is it true that if you wear one of the AirPods, it's better than having both because of the signal going through your brain? Something
it
that I read.
Probably, yeah. Is. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't think that one is safe, you know, and I guess two is worse. But at the same time, I would prefer people to just avoid it altogether for extended periods of time. And exactly. And that's really the issue. Again, it's If you want to use, you know, Bluetooth wearables during a workout, maybe that's okay. In the end, you're doing something great for your health, right? And you can work out and track your heart rate and whatnot. But that's a few hours per week maximum. If you listen to songs, for most people do these days, sometimes it's hours and hours on end, then it makes a good case to actually not do it. And when it comes to children, these risks have been, you know, calculated in adults, and these risks of brain tumor are in adult, and looking at epidemiology. So I cannot quote the scientist who said it, but epidemiology is counting the body bags. And that's the sad reality, is epidemiology is studying the past, who was damaged by the technology, and how many of those talked for how many hours, and we try to figure out the correlation, if not causality, over time. And that's part of the data we have. But in children, what we know is that children, because of the size of their head, will absorb an average of 200% the radiation compared to adults. Wow. So we don't know how that leads to additional brain cancer risks, but the sooner you start exposing your brain to this technology, I think the riskier it is over a lifetime. And we know that there is a vast lag. There is a delay between these exposures that could be considered carcinogenic, and then the onset or the creation of a brain tumor. Sometimes it can be decades. So it is really a tough sell for teenagers and for kids, but I would try to have kids use Bluetooth sparingly, if at all. And it is difficult. And if I can mention another way that people are using the phone that I think is the most dangerous, is keeping a phone in the pocket.
Yeah.
Just for adults, it is an issue, but also for kids. Why is that? Well, we have good data these days, so good, in fact, that neuroscientist Dr. Andrew Huberman emitted concerns last year. And he said, I reviewed the data on the fact that cell phones and pockets might be linked to a reduction in testosterone in men and a reduction of the quality of their sperm and fertility. In children, this might be an even bigger issue, because as you're developing your hormones, and these are related to your growth and to your future longevity and everything about your fertility systems. So he said that the data on cell phones and pocket and the loss of testosterone and fertility is stronger and more convincing than the data we have on BPA. And that's from someone from Stanford. So you have mainstream scientists that actually say, we do have a problem here. The data is strong enough that at least we should tell the population about these risks. And so far, the population is being told there's nothing to see here. And to this day, Health Canada And then the equivalent in the US would be FCC, Federal Communication Commissions. They basically say there are zero risks to these exposures. So either they're lying, incompetent, doing politics is probably a bit of everything. But, you know, there's been the FCC lost in court 3 years ago when the judges actually looked at the data that was presented by scientists. And the FCC continued to say, there's no data, there's no risks associated with this technology. But when the judges reviewed the evidence, they said, my God, you're completely irresponsible and you're not doing your job at all. So the FCC was forced by the federal court to go back to the drawing board and actually look at these risks. And so far, they've been stalling this case for 3 years. Really? So in the meantime, people are still exposed. The public is still in the dark. And people are still, you know, keeping a phone in the pocket. What could be a simpler alternative to a phone in the pocket is that when you put it in your pocket, you hit this airplane mode button. And I know it's a difficult habit to pick up. It demands that you think about it. Yes. My wife, when she was pregnant 6 years ago, I had to tell her about these risks because, of course, I'm the EMF guy. And have to negotiate with your loved ones, of course. You cannot say, you know, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. They're adults. Right. And even with children, it's a tricky business. Even with my five-year-old, I have to be aware that he also wants to hear things in a certain way where I can explain things and not, you know, be like a dictator about it. So I introduced the idea to my wife, it was very difficult for her to pick up the habit of putting the phone on airplane mode as she was wearing it or putting it near where our abdomen would be with growing child, you know, the baby. Yeah. So it was difficult at first, but after a few months, she found herself, you know, putting it on airplane mode and not even thinking about it. So sometimes it's a matter of, you know, just committing to doing it for a few weeks and then it becomes, you know, part of normal life.
Yeah, that's a great tip. Thank you. Because I see my teenager sometimes, more than sometimes, putting the phone in the pocket. I'm like, no. But that's a great tip. Yeah. It's a training. It's a brain training thing, right? That, yeah, just simply put it on airplane mode and that will help to limit the EMFs. Now, I do have a quick question about wearable tech. So the smartwatches, the rings, and, you know, people who have the diabetes monitors that are in their skin and connected to their cell phone. What's your thought? And hearing aids as well. What's your thoughts on those, if we can sort of lump those together?
Yeah, this is huge. You know, in the hearing aids, it's very concerning to me because most of the research around hearing aids is focused on how hearing aids can have benefits to people's lives. So there's very little research, if at all, about the potential risks of hearing aids because you don't need Bluetooth in hearing aids necessarily. These technologies are added on top of the good old hearing aids that were not Bluetooth just because of convenience, of course. And there are benefits to that convenience in the sense that if people can more easily turn up the volume and, you know, use their hearing aids in a way that makes their life more fulfilling, they can hear things. It's huge. It's a huge deal. Yeah. And when it comes to, you know, Bluetooth monitor for blood glucose for diabetics, the same idea is there. It brings tremendous benefits and sometimes life-saving benefits to their life. So we should not discount that entirely. However, I don't think that these pros are weighted properly with the cons because the cons are not discussed about. So we could have, for example, glucose monitors that emit a signal once per minute instead of maybe what they do right now could be multiple times per second. So there are ways to engineer the technology to be safer, or it could be shielded in a way where it emits minimal radiation towards your body and all the radiation towards the exterior, which would be just logical, but you don't have these considerations when engineers create biomedical devices because they listen to the FCC. And remember what the FCC said, there's no effect whatsoever, which is convenient because if you're a biomedical and medical engineer, there's no concern over Bluetooth exposures. So it doesn't make, you know, you don't have to spend a bunch of time thinking about how can we minimize the radiation from these devices. So this is really, when it comes to the use of Bluetooth for medical uses, normally I tell my readers, you have to find it for yourself. What works for you? There are hearing aids that are non-Bluetooth. There are certain companies that still create them, but audiologists normally recommend the Bluetooth kinds because this is the latest, this is the best technology, you know, the latest model. So it's becoming increasingly difficult to go without them. But I can mention one tracker that I use. I use this ring, the Oura Ring.
Yes.
And why I use it and love it is that it does not emit Bluetooth 24/7. I can keep it on airplane mode. So it means that in the morning, I can put the Bluetooth on and emit radiation, but just to my phone. And after a few seconds, the data is synced. I look at my phone and I say, okay, well, how have I slept? And what's my heart rhythm? And what's my HRV? And what's my stress level? Okay. And then I'm done. And I put the ring on airplane mode. And all day and all night, it will store the data locally inside the ring. There's a hard drive in this, believe it or not. I mean, I don't know how they do it, but they do. And it means that all technology should be designed this way, where you can have a minimal exposure. And at the moment, unfortunately, since we're most of the world is still under the belief that everything is safe, why would they engineer things to minimize radiation? They don't, because it's not a requirement.
Well, yeah, and this is the thing. And I think people have to question themselves and ask, you know, once they're aware and they listen to a podcast such as this, and we are starting to maybe raise some kind of flags for people to say, oh, I never thought about, you know, my smartwatch or my hearing aid that could possibly even be a problem. How am I feeling? Have I had headaches since I started, you know, using this thing? Just, I think that awareness piece is really important for people just to start to question. And then maybe if they can make choices and changes in terms of what tech they choose to use, and if they can put it on airplane mode, then by all means, right? That's definitely just opening minds, I think, is why we're here and why we're talking about this in the first place. And so I do have a question about laptops. Now, it's something that I've posted in my social media. Never put a laptop on your lap, because similar to the phone in the pocket, those EMFs are very damaging, especially to the reproductive organs, for fertility issues, sperm counts, and motility. That's been studied. How do you, and I know you have a hack for this, how do you sort of hack your laptop when you want to minimize your EMF exposure from Wi-Fi with your laptop, especially if you're away from home?
Yeah, well, when I'm at home, and that's something I'll mention first, because you can still use to this day a wire, which is, some people think, oh my God, you know, a wire, that's a wild idea. Instead of Wi-Fi, you use a wire. That's a bit retrograde, or it seems like something we would do, you know, 20 years ago, and it is. But you can use an Ethernet cable and plug it into the laptop, and sometimes you don't have an Ethernet port, so you need an Ethernet to USB-C converter or something very simple. It costs $20, you know, these converters, adapters, dongles, call them how you want. You need one. Yeah. And then you have this wire go into your router. That's the magic of it. That's it. Oh, the signal goes into your computer. And then on your computer, you also need to turn off Wi-Fi. So that Wi-Fi icon needs to be crossed out, and it means there's no radiation. If you are on the go, you cannot, you know, bring a cable, and you would be hard pressed to find an Ethernet port anywhere in the world. I know I've tried and haven't found them. So when I'm traveling the world, and oftentimes I go to coffee shop to work, I will have I'll try to make it simple, but you know, the visual isn't there, but you have a long USB cable that goes from your computer, and you can basically, instead of using Wi-Fi on your computer, at the end of this USB extension cord, you would have a small chip that looks almost like a USB key, but that's a USB Wi-Fi adapter. Oh. So what you're doing is this: you turn off Wi-Fi on your laptop, and you instead use this Wi-Fi chip to connect to the internet. But this Wi-Fi chip is not right next to your face.
It's
10 feet away.
I see.
Right, it's far away. So you're creating the distance. Again, you know, the phone is a problem when it's near your body. And the laptop, of course, the laptop is not on your face, but it is quite close to the body. And there are good studies also that found a reduction in fertility from Wi-Fi EMFs emitted by laptops on the lap. Because of course, if you work on your lap, you're exposing yourself to the maximum amount possible on the groin area, your stomach, and the, you know, the exposures that we know are problematic are to the head. We have evidence about acoustic neuromas that these are tumors that are non-malignant, but that can lead to complications, including death or deafness. We have parotid gland cancers, thyroid cancers. The evidence is getting better and better. Glioblastomas. So we have cancers in the literature, cancers of the head and neck region. But yes, researchers have asked the questions, could laptop exposure or cell phones in pocket be linked to the vast increases that we see in teenagers and kids in cancers of the groin area? We have uterine ovarian cancer, uterus cancer, testicular cancer, colon cancer, and we do not know. There's no data that is definitive. So it is a concern, because if it's a carcinogen to your head, why wouldn't it be a carcinogen if you put it not to your head, but to your, you know, to your genitalia? Well, the reality is, it is likely also something you don't want to do. So the laptop, if you use it on Wi-Fi, at least never use it on your lap. It's just, it's kind of silly, because that's the name it's used to, you know. I don't know actually why they called it a laptop, because the old laptops used to weigh so much that they weren't really comfortable to use on the lap. But nowadays, you know, with the nice MacBook computers that weigh 2 pounds, you know, they're so thin, they're so cool. You use them on the sofa, at least create separation between the laptop and your body, such as using a pillow. But even then, I prefer using them on a table, and that way you're not exposed very close to the body.
And sort of sit back from it and stretch your arms out as much as possible.
If you
need to, because I mean, now I'm thinking of my kids too, the kids that are still in school, they need to be, it's a requirement for school to be on a laptop in a lot of their courses. I mean, it's not paper anymore. Like back in the day when I was a kid, everything is, you know, electronic. So yeah, whatever, you know, little changes we can make and our kids can make during the day, those are, you know, it's the little things that you do day to day that make the big difference, you know, later on. And again, as we're aging, right? So, okay, smart meters, another question that I have. So of course here, we're both in Canada, but in other parts of the world, they, you know, years ago started implementing and putting in the smart meters for our homes. And of course, if everybody doesn't know what a smart meter is, it's what is, you know, at least in our region, it's monitoring your use of your electricity and such. And of course, they dock you for it. If you're using and doing a load of laundry at the wrong time of day or running your dishwasher at the wrong time of day, you're going to get docked for it so that they can monitor in terms of your usage. Now, these give off EMFs, correct? And can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the risks of that? And I don't know, the levels, like in smart meter versus a laptop, like how do we quantify this?
Yes, well, the laptop you can turn off and you can listen to my advice and have an Ethernet cable, but a smart meter you cannot turn off. And that's why it's slightly different. Some people have found that when a smart meter is installed on their home, they start feeling more sensitive to EMFs. And that's something that is hard to define. Some researchers would call it electrosensitivity. So that's one concern. The smart meters, some of them emit several times per second. And some engineers that are EMF aware have asked the question, why do these machines send a signal about my electricity usage 6 times per second? And the answer is, we don't know. We've designed them this way because other models can emit, for example, once per 30 minutes. So it's just completely nonsensical the way they're architectured and created in the first place. Then you have the problem that in certain situations, people find that it impacts their sleep when they are too close to a smart meter. Then not only one smart meter, but sometimes you can have a vast array of different smart meters, sometimes up to 50 for the entire building. And that could be on the other side of the wall. So if you are on an apartment building, a condo building, just think about it and look at the other side of the wall. If there's, you know, an entire wall of smart meters, if you sleep well, maybe don't panic over it. But if you've been sleeping very poorly, it could have a strong correlation, in which case I would recommend, you know, if it's an entire wall of smart meters, it's hard to mitigate against. I would look into hiring what's called a building biologist. And these are professionals that can survey the environment and actually look at how much are these machines emitting. And this is, in those cases, it's almost a sort of environmental pollution that is invasive inside your home, which is very, very frustrating for a lot of people, because no matter how much you mitigate against Wi-Fi, or even you change your habits around cell phones after having listened to this very interview, well, the smart meters can still be problematic. If you have one smart meter on your home, you can either replace it with a non-smart meter that is analog, with these little quadrants that actually spin like this. Yeah, so these are the old school models. In certain states or countries, you can do that and do what's called an opt-out from the smart meter program. But in certain legislations, they won't let you do it. It's simply by law, they can actually impose the smart meter on you. In which case, the next best thing is what's called a smart meter guard or cover that you can put over the smart meter, and it will dampen the radiation. Not perfect, as many things go with EMF mitigation. It's not the perfect solution, but at least it's, you know, slightly improving the environment.
Yes. And do they emit the EMFs like 360 degrees all the way around the actual device? Because I know that
it's mostly in front, but a little bit in the back, and it will depend. It will depend on the composition of the wall and all sorts of factors. So sometimes your own smart meter can be problematic, and sometimes it's a neighbor that emits a smart meter towards you.
Towards
so
you.
It is a complicated thing. Yeah.
So you may need to complicated thing. You may need to buy one for your neighbor as well. Just put it on their smart meter. Oh, yeah. Hopefully you have good neighbors,
maybe in that case,
right?
You want to. Yeah, you want to at least give them some context, or maybe if you know that they're skeptical, don't tell them about it and just install the cover and say, you know, oh, I'm just, you know, it's for your own good. I don't know. It's a tough sell. It's difficult to, like in this day and age, you cannot go to a neighbor and tell them you need to turn off your Wi-Fi at night. You know, wouldn't it be good if I could do that in my building? But at the moment, you might look like an alien if you do that. And so you have to go through education and letting people make their own decisions also, which is, it's tough. But the reality is that you should really focus on what you have control over. And then if you find that your neighbor's on board, well, you can, you know, have the entire building turn off the Wi-Fi at night. And what might just happen is that it might become a habit, and people should sleep better in this environment.
Right. Not to mention headaches and getting flu-like symptoms. I'll share just really quickly. I had an experience. I was staying in a hotel, and I got very, very sick. Flu-like, you know, it was really bad. It was like the worst flu I had ever had in my life. And looking back at that, went back to that area probably 6 to 8 months later and looked above the hotel. I know exactly which room we were in the hotel, looked above, and sure enough, there were some 5G installations right above the room that we were staying in. And I thought, that's what it was. Because I rarely get sick, knock on wood again. You know, it's something that I take a lot of pride in my health, and I do, you know, what I think is right to take care of myself and my family in terms of health. That's just who I am, right? And it was such a weird thing that I got so sick, and sure enough, I 100% believe that it was because those towers were right above that room. And yeah, for people who don't know, and then, you know, it makes you more aware when you're out and about and driving in different areas and you see a lot of these towers, the cell phone towers that are now on top of buildings, right? That people are living in these buildings. I hope they were consulted. Like, are you okay with the fact that we're going to install these, you know? And back to your point,
they are not consulted.
No, of course. And back to your point where, you know, according to the powers that be, that there's no problem here, right? So this is where I think when we educate one another, it definitely, hopefully, will have some traction for decision makers that are able to potentially, you know, at least have some more awareness around this, or the technology in some way changes, that it, yes, you can still have, right? You can still have the technology, you can still have the ability to use this tech, and it helps to move our, you know, the speed of what we do forward in a great way, but at the same time, you know, not so detrimental for our health in the long run, which is so important. Okay, so here's another question. So for people who live in densely populated areas, big cities, we know that, and certainly if there is a lot of, you know, cell phone towers and things, they're visible, you know that they're there. More people, of course, using their cell phones. Is there a way to, besides moving and just getting out of there and moving, you know, up into the mountain somewhere, is there a way or other ways that we can protect ourselves from maybe not even our own EMFs from our own cell phones, but from, you know, the ambient EMFs that are around us? Like, what can we do to help to mitigate some of those risks on our physiology?
Yeah. It is tricky. This part of the conversation is not my favorite, because talking about cell phone towers is quite scary. And then the solutions are, some people need to move away, or yeah, some people need to fight and do an entire legal battle against who installs these cell phone towers. And the rights of citizens around getting these removed is quite slim. It's very, very difficult to fight those. Although there are some groups of attorneys that are now seeing wins over, you know, the placement of cell phone towers. So that's a good thing. I want to mention case reports that have been published by Leonard Hardell and Mona Nilsson in Sweden. Leonard Hardell is the first scientist that is recognized to have sounded the alarm towards the fact that the Agent Orange that was sprayed over Vietnam during the war was a carcinogen. Highly credentialed. And he's now an expert on EMF. He's been doing epidemiology around EMFs for 20 years. And he's now doing, he's published 8 different case studies in the last 3 years on people who are in a certain place, 5G gets installed very close to their either apartment building or office space, and then they don't feel well. For example, this case report in 2023, were essentially the levels of EMFs measured were 250 times greater when they installed the 5G tower compared to the previous towers that were there, 3G and 4G. So what I want to tell people is this. If you are concerned that a tower is pointing straight at your bedroom, or you can almost touch it with a stick, because in certain situations, citizens are living in high rises and they're right next to a tower, and you don't feel well where you live, hire a building biology consultant and make sure to take the readings. Maybe you'll find that everything is well, or maybe you'll find that the levels are so high that this is unsustainable. And when the government, the Indian government, looked at the data more than 10 years ago in the Rajasthan province, which is the most densely populated area or the largest province in India, they had to dismantle hundreds and thousands of different cell towers because they were too close to people's homes, too close to hospitals, too close to schools, too close to playgrounds, and too close to, you know, nursing homes, things like that, where sensitive populations are. So in certain countries, in fact, they're starting to move away these towers, but we don't hear about the fact that these legislations are put in place. In North America, it is the opposite of what is happening in France, in Israel, in India. You also have cases in, you know, all around the Western nations and beyond. You have cases where cell phone towers were deemed dangerous. But in North America, our rules are among the most permissive of the entire planet, along with Australia and a few nations in the Western world. So it means that if you think you are overexposed to cell phone towers, you need to take readings. And then there are groups, there's this group Physicians for Safe Technology, if you want to find doctors that actually talk about these dangers, not just the EMF guy, you know, and and or some person, some blogger on the internet. Actually, Physicians for Safe Technology, if you type that in any search engine, you're going to find them. These are physicians that can actually, you know, see you or you can talk about these dangers and not feel like a crazy person. And wow. there's an increasing amount of physicians that are now trained around these dangers. And what I've been told in my latest summit is that more and more people come in with these sensitivities where they say, you know, I used to be fine. Maybe I lived in this apartment building in Manhattan. I felt fine, but now I don't. All of a sudden, is it because I'm getting old? And sometimes it is, but also combined with an increased amount of reactivity to this agent that is invisible. So think about it this way. Maybe at first you can tolerate dairy and gluten when you're 20-year-old. And maybe at 35, you realize, oh my God, my digestion is all, you know, messed up. What's happening? And it's not necessarily that gluten and dairy are more dangerous than before, but maybe your tolerance has changed. And more and more people become in this almost, it's not like being intolerant to gluten. They become like a celiac that reacts so much to a little bit of exposure. And you don't want to reach this level of sensitivity because it makes it next to impossible to live in today's modern world. It makes it that you don't feel well in a city, for example. So there are ways to recover from these exposures. And this is a sort of stuff that we've been talking about with medical doctors and different attorneys and EMF mitigation specialists in the summit also.
Oh, that's so fantastic to know that there's a resource now and there's people that actually won't look at you like you have two heads when you start saying that, yeah, I'm not feeling well because of this type of exposure. So that's great. That's really promising. That's better than, you know, what I've heard in the last 10 years, you know, in terms of people waking up to this type of, you know, correlation. So that's fantastic. So do you recommend, and have you had someone come into your home and to look for, you know, dirty electricity and to sort of do an assessment? Is that something that you recommend that people do in their homes?
For sure. I think, you know, and dirty electricity is a whole another animal. It's not only the radio frequency radiation that is a man-made EMF, but dirty electricity is, let's say, the amount of different frequencies that can be present on the electricity in your home. Almost think of it as, you know, you can have clean tap water in certain municipalities, or you can have dirty tap water. So you can have clean electricity and you can have dirty electricity that just is that much more stressful to your biology. So building biologists or different types of EMF mitigation specialists can look at different types of fields, and their goal is not, you know, complete elimination. It's like saying, please try to eliminate all toxins from your life. Good luck with that. You know, Eskimos are finding in snow samples, glyphosate in snow samples, and even on the ice cap. So we cannot escape all toxins. What we can do is try to do better. And when you quantify your environment with these professionals, at least you can know for sure, is it the towers I should be worried about? Or is it just, you know, the different machines that I've been installing all over my home that contribute to this electropollution?
Right. Because there could be, you know, whether it's the light bulbs, it's the smart, you know, homes with the that you can connect the Wi-Fi, all of that. Not so great if you're sensitive. But even if, like you're saying, if you're not sensitive yet, it's something that your exposure over time, it could be, you know, one day you just hit that tipping point and you have a serious problem. So decreasing, you know, and is it expensive to have these people come in? And like, I have no idea. I've not yet done it, so that's why I'm asking.
it can be an investment. I'll be honest about it. Some of them are several hundred dollars, a little bit over $1,000. It depends on how many different things you have to measure, what is the size of your home, of course. So it can be quite an investment. And then the mitigation strategies are also an investment. But I think that increasingly people recognize the value of investing in not only their diet and supplements, but also how clean is the environment. If you make the building biologists are not just about EMFs, and I should have mentioned that, but sometimes most of them are also trained on air quality, the quality of your water, the presence or absence of mold. So all of these things will contribute also to sensitivities, because people who are sometimes EMF sensitive are also feeling the effects of mold. They don't feel good in a moldy home, or, and sometimes, again, they are hypersensitive to mold, which means a little bit of mold is problematic for them and might not be problematic even for their husband or wife. So it makes it even sometimes very difficult when one person in the household does not feel good and everyone else is fine, right? Uh-huh. Talk about a situation where it's very easy to discount them or disregard how they're feeling. Come on, we're fine. You know, the cell towers are exposing me and I feel perfectly fine. Uh-huh. And that's good for you. But it does not mean that it doesn't do anything, because on a cellular level, the stress is still there. And over time, maybe your tolerance will go down. And I don't wish down on anyone, but the reality is more and more people are feeling it these days.
Right, right. Okay, well, that's great advice and definitely something to look into for people that, especially if you're not doing well, if you are suffering with some kind of condition, or you know that you've got a candida or mold issue and you have that super sensitivity, that definitely to investigate not only the mold, but you said, like you said, the EMFs in your environment as well. That's a great takeaway, I think, for a lot of my followers, that we do talk about these issues and gut health and microbiome and mold and candida and parasites. And if, some people are just more sensitive, but you have to wonder and ask yourself why, right? So EMFs could tie into all of that.
For sure.
Question about electric cars. What's your take on electric cars? Is there any data out on electric cars now and affecting health?
You know, there's a lot of speculation where some people think, well, electric cars, but it says it in the name, right? We're getting zapped and these are higher exposures. One of my colleagues took readings. The electric cars are hybrid. They're not necessarily worse than the new cars that are gas powered, because the new cars that are gas powered are, you know, have sensors in them. They have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, and sometimes you have 4G LTE hotspots right there in the dashboard. So in reality, all cars are becoming increasingly so great sources of exposures. So in cars, what you could do is turn off Wi-Fi, turn off Bluetooth, if that option is available in the dashboard, and especially so if you spend a lot of time in your car, right? If you barely commute, that car is always parked or, you know, in your garage, don't worry about that source that much. Focus on your computer and where you spend time in your bedroom. But if you're like my dad, who's a realtor, for example, and you spend 3-4 hours, 5 hours in your car per day, then it becomes a priority for you. Right.
Of
so
course. Yeah.
I don't think we should be completely paranoid of electric cars yet. But what we should think about is never really spend time in that car while it's charging. And I've seen the levels while it's charging. It's not recommended. I don't know why you would want to do that anyway, but don't do it.
Okay. That's a great takeaway. Yeah. I know that I'm super sensitive to electric cars. I don't like them. I don't feel well when I'm in them. And that's just me. But that's another story. I'm super sensitive. So anything else that you wanted to mention, Nick, before we part ways? It was so wonderful to have you here and to share all of your expertise. Is there any takeaway that, you know, you feel that you need to say before we say goodbye?
Well, I'll just start with a few tips, because I think it can, I'll recognize that this can be overwhelming. If you think about EMFs, especially if you buy a meter, I'm all about buying a meter and, you know, being curious, but sometimes it's a source of anxiety for people. Let's face it, they measure the computer, it's bad. They measure their TV screen, it's bad. Everything's bad, right? So don't measure your toaster or Vitamix. Measure things that matter. So your pillow. Right? What is near your pillow? Because the bedroom environment should be as clean as possible. That's first. The second place I want you to focus on is, where else do you spend time? Is it your office environment, or is it your car, or is it your favorite sofa, or is it your kitchen table where you work, right? Mm-hmm. So you know where you're spending time during the week. And this is really where you're spending time is where you should mitigate. You know, and I talk about the toaster example. Someone writes to me the other day and says, Nick, my toaster is Bluetooth. Is it a worry for my health? And I say, how much time do you spend, you know, your face looking at your toasts in the morning? 2 minutes? Right. So don't worry about 2 minutes. Worry about 200 hours per month kind of thing, right? So think in these terms, and then forget the little occasional exposures, because you're going to be overwhelmed. So instead, focus on your bedroom and focus on where you spend time. And if you want me to get into the summit, The summit is very simple. It's 20 interviews for 4 days. It's April 11th to 14th. There's Robert F. Kennedy Jr. There's Dr. Neil Nathan, who talks about how he helps patients that are hypersensitive recover and go back to health. There's a lot of hope that I want to talk about with this summit. So not only is it a source of information to discover how you might be sensitive yourself, how to mitigate against these different risks, but mm-hmm. also think about it as an invitation to recover and feel better, because a lot of people realize I'm sensitive. And the message I heard from my guest this year, because this is the third time we do this annual summit, is that you can recover. And it's not true that you're bound to get worse. And many people think that year mm-hmm. after year, they're going to feel more and more sensitive, and I feel sick and I don't feel well. You can recuperate, but many people don't have the right information. So I think with the summit is the occasion for them to listen to the right scientists, to the right medical doctors, even the right attorneys that are joining us for the summit, including the Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's an environmental attorney, and learn from them directly. So I'm very excited to present this information. It's free of charge to watch for 4 days, April 11th to 14th.
That is amazing. And I definitely will be tuning into that. So much, you know, promising. And that's what I love, the fact that you bring it back to, you know, having a positive outlook on things. So much of what we do in educating people, I think, about health can be very super scary. And yeah. and some people don't want to hear it. But yeah, the education piece is part of it. But then to know that there are things that we can do to protect ourselves and to feel better is so empowering. So that is fantastic. So I know that there is a link, emfhazards.com, correct, that everybody can get on board with the summit for this year, that I encourage everybody to take a look at. And how can people reach you, Nick, if they want to, you know, get in contact with you, your website, your book? Let us know.
Sure. Everything is found as at the EMF guy. So theemfguy.com. And okay. that's my book, courses, my podcast, everything is in between. And again, you mentioned it nicely, emfhazards.com is the summit. And we're always, you know, putting out a new summit every year. I think it's going to be an annual event, because we can always reach out to so many people and at least make them aware of these issues.
That's so amazing. Well, I thank you, Nick, for taking the time to sit and chat with me today. It was very enlightening, such great information, research-backed as well. We will be adding some of the links to some of the research and the studies, the reviews that you mentioned. Hopefully, that will help to, you know, really solidify for some people who do have that sort of nerdy, science-y aspect of their personality, like I do, to really see that this is something that we can take a deeper look at. And I thank you again for joining me. Good luck with the summit, and I'm sure we will speak again soon.
Thank you so much.